be in chapters 1 and 2. But by way of background, without going into any great detail, the kingdom of Judah, of course, due to their sin, had been captive in Babylon for 70 years. Babylon power had been broken by the Persians, and immediately Cyrus, the king of Persia, encouraged God's people to return to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple, which of course was destroyed when Nebuchadnezzar came in with his armies. Coming to the book of Nehemiah, the temple has been rebuilt, but scattered and strewn about the city were still the fragments and the debris and the wreckage of what was once a mighty wall. The broken rock and the charred timbers scattered over the land, of course, was a very grim and dismal scene, a very grim and dismal reminder of what had happened. And it was certainly a picture of ruin and a picture of the judgment of the Lord. And as we come to the book of Nehemiah, it's now the 20th year of the reign of Artaxerxes, the king of Persia. And a Jewish man is brought before us by the name of Nehemiah. He's in the palace. He holds a position before the king. How Nehemiah came to Babylon, we do not know. He could have been one of those who were carried captive into Babylon. He could have been one who was born during the captivity. Really doesn't matter. We do know from chapter 2 and verse 3 that there were those of his family that were buried in Jerusalem. He speaks of the place of my father's sepulchres lieth waste. So he has family members buried in Jerusalem. The account opens in verse 2 of chapter 1 with Hanani and certain men of Judah coming to Shushan, and Nehemiah asked them a question. And the report of these men is recorded in verse 3. The question was, how are the Jews doing in Jerusalem? And they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also was broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Then we read that the effect that this had upon Nehemiah in verse 4. And it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days, and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. His prayer is recorded in verses 5 through 11. Coming to chapter 2, 4 months have passed. We know that because in verse 1 of chapter 1, it is the month of Chisalu, which is the ninth month of the year. And when we come to chapter 2, it is now the month of Nisan, which is the first month of the year. So 4 months have passed from verse 2 to chapter 2 and verse 1. And at this time, the king, again, remember, it's been 4 months now since Nehemiah has gotten a report concerning the condition of Jerusalem. And the king noticed that Nehemiah was not himself. And he asked Nehemiah a question. Why is thy countenance so sad? Nehemiah responds in verse 3 and said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? And then we see that the king asked Nehemiah in verse 4, For what dost thou make request? And then we read in verse 4 the reaction of Nehemiah. Remember the reaction of Nehemiah in chapter 1 in verse 4. And we see the reaction here. So I prayed to the God of heaven. So I want to take the thought this evening from what we read there in verse 4 of chapter 1. I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And then here in chapter 2 and verse 4, so I prayed to the God of heaven. Both of those verses record the reaction of Nehemiah to two different events, but very connected events. In both cases, we see his reaction. Now, a reaction, of course, is an action performed in response to something. It can be in response to something we've heard, seen, experienced, whatever. But on both occasions, his reaction was prayer. Again, he said in chapter 1, verse 4, I sat down and wept and mourned. It's easy to do that, but that's not all that we're to do. In all of our weeping and all of our mourning, we better not leave off fasting and praying. And what he means here is that instead of eating, he prayed. Instead of eating, he prayed. He was burdened. And he did this for some time, for certain days. Also in chapter 2, verse 4, so I prayed. So again, two different events, though they are connected. But the reaction of Nehemiah was the same both times. He prayed. We can tell a lot about our spiritual condition by our reactions. And I'm talking about our initial reactions. He prayed. Oh, that would be a characteristic and a hallmark of our life. It is in this reaction of prayer, this reaction of prayer ought to mark all aspects of our life, all areas of our life, all seasons and all details of our life. It was during Brother Asbury's visitation. Got on the subject of Facebook with somebody. Everybody here knows what I think of Facebook. But they said, well, Brother Dan, you have to I made the statement, I feel it's the greatest evil that's ever come upon Baptist churches, and I believe that. And they said, well, Brother Dan, you have to understand it's a vehicle for prayer. And I said, well, there's two problems. Number one, I don't believe God's people pray that much. I really don't. Look around. Number two, if they're praying, they don't have time to be on Facebook. But how much of our life, how much do we react with prayer? I sat down and wept and mourned, and fasted and prayed. So I prayed. So I want to speak tonight on the reaction of prayer. And to what extent is our life characterized by the reaction of prayer. First of all, consider the stimulant of Nehemiah's reaction. What is it that caused Nehemiah to react the way he did? Again, a reaction must have a stimulant. It must have an incentive. It must have an encouragement. And in Nehemiah's case, the stimulant is found in the twice used phrase, the God of heaven. The God of heaven. This speaks of the greatness of God, the exaltation of God, the supremacy of God, the God of heaven. It speaks of the rule of God. He's the one who's in control. He's the one who manages the affairs of the universe. He's the one who directs and guides and governs all things in all places. The God of heaven. It speaks of His omniscience. It speaks of His sufficiency, His power. And the God of heaven is all that we need, and He can. He is the one who placed the sun, the moon, the stars, the galaxies, the planets in the skies by merely speaking. And He is the one who created the mind-boggling distances of the stars. He's the one who created all. He's the one who sends the wind and the rain and the snow and the hail. The God of heaven. We read in 1 Chronicles 29 and 12 that both riches and honor come of God. And He reigns over all. And in His hand is power and might. And in His hand is to make great and to give strength unto all. We read in Proverbs 21 and verse 1 concerning Him, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, He turneth it whithersoever He will. That's the God of heaven. We read in Jeremiah 32 and verse 17, Thou hast made heaven and the earth by Thy great power and stretched out arm. There is nothing too hard for Thee. And it is declared in Luke 1 verse 37, that with God nothing is impossible. And Ephesians 3 and verse 20, He is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think. This is the God of heaven, and He is the one who can. Isaiah 41 verse 18, He can open rivers in high places. Rivers aren't in high places, but God can open rivers in high places, and fountains in the midst of the valleys. And He can make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry land springs of water. The God of heaven. Again, the God of heaven, this speaks of the fact that He is. That He is the Lord of hosts. And as it says in Psalm 91 and verse 1, He is the Most High. That is, He is the one who towers above all. This world, of course, is a place of peril. It's a place of storms. It's a place of traps. It's a place of evil. It's a place of threats. It's a place of very powerful enemies. But the God of heaven towers above them all. There are situations. There are circumstances. There are problems of all kinds and trials and difficulties and infirmities and burdens and needs. But the God of heaven towers above them all. Nehemiah was certain of the God of heaven. Why did Nehemiah pray? Someone would say, well, because of his circumstances. No, that's not why he prayed. He prayed because he knew there was a God in heaven. He prayed because he knew the God of heaven. He prayed because he trusted the God of heaven. That's the stimulus here. The God of heaven. Nehemiah was certain. Nehemiah knew that he could find help in the God of heaven. So what did he do? He prayed. He prayed. Doesn't that make sense? I mean, if you know that, then that's going to be the reaction. Going to pray. The truth is, many don't know that. Nehemiah was certain and he knew that there was strength in the God of heaven. That he could find enablement in the God of heaven, the enablement he needed. So what did Nehemiah do? He prayed. He knew that in the God of heaven, he could find guidance. He could find instruction. He could find wisdom. Knowing that, he prayed. That is the stimulant to this reaction. That Nehemiah sat down, wept, and mourned, and fasted, and prayed. It is the stimulant of, so I prayed to the God of heaven. Nehemiah knew, Nehemiah was certain that there was joy, there was peace, there was relief, there was comfort in God. So he prayed. And if we know that, we'll do the same thing. And if we're always mindful of that, that will be our reaction. So I prayed. So it is the God of heaven that is the stimulant to prayer. Not the circumstance. The circumstance is not the stimulant to prayer. In most cases, for most people, it is. And here's how that works. You have a real problem, and you're overwhelmed with that problem. So that circumstance causes you to pray. Things are going well. That circumstance doesn't cause you to pray. If circumstances are your stimulant to praying, you're not going to pray much. This is the stimulant to prayer. God of heaven. I know there's a God in heaven. And we believe what this book records of Him. And when that gets a hold of us, we will pray. We will truly pray. You see, the words, the God of heaven, that's unchanging. That never changes. That's continuous. So that's a good stimulant. We're to always be praying. So it seems to me that our stimulant must be unchanging and continuous. And our stimulant is God. If your stimulant is your circumstances, then you're not going to pray much. God just becomes a fire escape to you. So this must be our stimulus, God of heaven. There is the God of heaven. Pray. We need to be a praying people. A praying people. We must not be distracted from prayer. And our stimulant must be God of heaven. We must always be aware that He is. And then this will be our reaction. So let's look at Nehemiah's reaction. Again, we hear Nehemiah say, I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And in Nehemiah 2 verse 4, I prayed, so I prayed to the God of heaven. whatever else was going on in Nehemiah's life, and in spite of his other obligations and responsibilities, he sat down. Perhaps his, you know how it is, you get shocking news and you've got to sit down. Perhaps that's the reason he sat down here after hearing what he heard. And then he wept and he mourned. And we can do that for days. Weep and mourn, weep and mourn. But there better be more to it than that. And he fasted. And he prayed. And that was not just a passing moment type of thing, but it says he did so for certain days. He prayed. He prayed passionately. It says in verse 3, "And I said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven." There it is again, God of heaven. "I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven." There's emotion in that word, O. There's passion in the word beseech. People often talk how bad things are, and, you know, we seem to think that politics is going to fix that. God's people need to be praying. Need to be praying. He says in verse 11, "O Lord," there it is again, emotion, "I beseech thee." There's passion. He prayed persistently and continually. Verse 6, it says, day and night. Day and night. He's praying. Yes, we can weep day and night. We can mourn day and night, but we better pray also. So it is certain days, day and night. For days, day and night, I prayed. What was he committed to here? Praying. Why was he committed to praying? Because he knew there was a God in heaven that could. So he kept praying. Again, we hear Nehemiah say, "I sat down and wept and mourned certain days, and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And so I prayed to the God of heaven." And again, it was done on two different occasions, 4 months apart. But it was his impulse to pray. He heard something, and his impulse was to pray. That was his impulse. That needs to be our impulse. It needs to be our first reaction to pray. We hear something, we see something, we experience something. We can get angry, we can get hurt, I mean, we can get a lot of things. But our first impulse ought to be, I'm going to pray. And the reason I'm going to pray is because I know there's a God in heaven. The reason is not because I'm in trouble, but the reason is because I know there's a God in heaven. You have to wonder how many people really know that. His reaction was prayer. So what does that mean? So what does that mean that his reaction was prayer? Well, it means that he took his proper place before God. You do not pray until you take your proper place before God. And that's why if you use God as a fire escape, you're not really praying anyway. Because you're not taking your proper place before God. True praying is man's realization and man's plea of weakness, ignorance, and need. And in all true praying, self-will is laid to the side. And there is the taking the place of surrender and recognizing the sovereignty and the greatness and the authority and the power and the ownership of God. So in chapter 1 and verse 4, notice what it says, and prayed before the God of heaven. The word before there is speaking of his position. He's in the presence of God. Nehemiah 2:4, he says, I prayed to the God of heaven. Two different things here. I believe before you can pray to, you have to pray before. Have to be in a proper position. So personal examination is necessary. To what extent is my life characterized by taking my proper place before God in prayer? Prayer means that the heart is drawn to God. True prayer. The heart is drawn to God. So Nehemiah in chapter 1 verse 2 hears this news that is not pleasing. And the impulse was that his heart was drawn to God. Where is our heart drawn? What is our reaction? His heart was drawn to God. What that means is when in his praying he was cleaving to God. It's like Jacob. He wasn't going to let go. True praying. I mean, if you know, he's the God of heaven. He's my only hope. You cleave. You cleave to him. And in true praying, there's a cleaving to God. He's praying before God. His focus is upon God. Oh, that our hearts would be drawn to God in every phase, in every aspect, in every area, in every pursuit, in every relationship, in every situation, in every circumstance. That would be a reaction. My heart is drawn to God. So to what extent is my life marked and characterized by my heart being drawn to God in prayer? It also means that he earnestly sought God. In all true praying, there's a desire. There's a yearning. There's a passion. And the desire and the yearning and the passion is for God. It's for God. It's not just about the circumstance. It's a yearning and a passion for God. And that was his reaction. In all true praying, there's a desire and a longing for his presence. That's what we need. For his glory, for his power, for his help, his intervention, his manifestation, his will. Again, personal examination is necessary. To what extent do we seek God? Remember last Wednesday night, we spoke on keep praying because praying changes us. You may pray and pray and pray and pray day and night for days and nothing changes regarding your circumstances. But you keep praying because it'll change you. It'll draw you closer to God. You see these people who say, well, I prayed for a long time, but I stopped because it wasn't working. You're praying for the wrong reasons. You don't even know what prayer is. Prayer changes us. It doesn't change the will of God. Why would you want to change the will of God? His will is perfect. He prayed. It means that he called upon God for something specific. And he cast himself upon God. This was his reaction. That needs to be our reaction. We see something, we hear something, we experience something. And our reaction should be to call upon God. Why? Because we know there's a God in heaven. Cast ourselves upon him. Why? Because the God in heaven can sustain us. So we pray. It also means that he believed that God was the answer. Why is it that people run to and fro? Because they believe the answer is somewhere else. We believe that the answer is with God. So it seems to me that ought to be the first place we go. It ought to be the place we continue to go. Because he has the answer. And if God doesn't answer, as far as the way you want him to answer, he's still the answer. No one else is. So pray. We read in Hebrews 11, in verse 6, but without faith it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is. So the fact that Nehemiah prayed is a statement that he believed who God was. Every time we truly pray, it is a statement that we believe God. We believe that there is a God in heaven. True praying is a personal belief, assurance, and confidence of God's authority, of God's love, of his teaching, of his sustenance, of his care, his instruction, his correction, his consolation, his power. It's a trust in those things. So again, the reaction of Nehemiah, chapter 1, verse 4, I sat down and wept and mourned, and fasted and prayed. In all of our weeping and all of our mourning, don't forget to pray. Otherwise, you'll just feel sorry for yourself. You'll get depressed. Weep, you mourn. Nothing wrong with that. Don't forget to pray. Don't forget to pray instead of eat. You're burdened about something enough, you'll pray. You know, people all the time, they get so depressed they can't eat. But the problem is they don't pray while they're not eating. Fasting and prayer, it means you pray instead of eat. So I prayed, chapter 2, verse 4. The impulse was to pray. Oh, that would be our impulse. To pray. The circumstances, the situations, the happenings of life are innumerable. And they can change in a second. But prayer needs to be our impulse. Whatever these other things are, prayer needs to be our impulse. Whatever the circumstances, prayer needs to be our impulse. Whatever our concerns, and our concerns can be regarding ourselves, Our concerns could be regarding our friends or our families, our health or the health of friends or family. It can be our careers, our finances, personal relationships. It can be our own hearts, our own minds, our own emotions. But whatever, may it be our impulse to pray. You perhaps have a struggle one day in your heart. It can be about just about anything. What should you do? Take a pill? Try praying. Pray. Don't misunderstand what I just said. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with taking medicine. But pray. That needs to be our impulse. Hear Nehemiah say, I prayed before the God of heaven. So I prayed to the God of heaven. When we're brought face to face with difficulties and trials, this needs to be our impulse to pray. When there is sorrow, it needs to be our impulse to pray. When there is joy, it needs to be our impulse to pray. When there are losses or when there are gains, it needs to be our impulse to pray. When there are decisions to be made, our impulse should be to go to God in prayer. That should be our first impulse. That should be the reaction. Why? Because we know there's a God in heaven. We know there's a God in heaven. When it's time to get up in the morning, how often can we say, I prayed before the God of heaven. I prayed to the God of heaven. When it's time to go to bed at night, how often can we say, I prayed before the God of heaven. I prayed to the God of heaven. When we open this book and read it, so I prayed to the God of heaven. We ought to pray before we read it. We ought to pray while we're reading it. When it's time to go to church, I prayed before the God of heaven. It's time to go to church, so I prayed to the God of heaven. We're in church. So I prayed before the God of heaven. So I prayed to the God of heaven. It's time for the preacher to get up and preach. So I prayed to the God of heaven. The preacher is preaching. So I prayed to the God of heaven. The preacher is done preaching. So I prayed to the God of heaven. That needs to be our impulse. We need to be a people of prayer. We live in the last days of the last days. And it doesn't appear that there's a whole lot of real praying going on. I prayed before the God of heaven. When it comes to the unsaved, how often can we say, I prayed before the God of heaven for their soul? I prayed to the God of heaven for their soul. There's unsaved people in our midst every church service. We that are saved ought to be praying that God would save their soul. You say, well, God's going to save their soul whether I pray or not. That's true. But remember, praying changes you. Remember that. So I prayed to the God of heaven. The stimulant for doing so, the God of heaven. Now notice, and we're going to close, in Nehemiah chapter 1 and verse 1. He says, I was in Shushan, the palace. Notice in verse 4, before the God of heaven. He's in the palace. He's before the God of heaven. Before the God of heaven is more beneficial to us than being in the palace. Much more beneficial. There's no better place to be before the God of heaven. Wherever we go, it ought to be our practice to get before God and to pray. We need to be a praying people. We hear things, we see things, we experience things. And our reaction needs to be, so I prayed before the God of heaven. So I prayed to the God of heaven. May that be our reaction. Someone says, well, that all sounds good. I think starting tonight, I'm going to do that. No, you're not. Not until you really, truly believe, until it grips your heart that there is a God in heaven. There is a God in heaven. We get a hold of that, and prayer will be our reaction. If prayer is not our impulse, if prayer is not our reaction, it is because it has not really gotten a hold of us that there is a God. So I believed in God all my life. That may be so. But has it gotten a hold of you? There is a God in heaven. The reaction to that fact is I want to get close to Him. And I'm going to pray. Again, we need to be a people of prayer. The apostles asked Christ, Lord, teach us to pray. You look at the context, Jesus had been praying. They heard Him pray. I mean, if you heard Christ pray, we'd all say the same thing, Lord, teach us to pray. No man preached like Christ, no man prayed like Christ. But prayer is something, my point is, prayer is something we learn. Lord, teach us to pray. And I've heard people all my ministry say, oh, I wouldn't pray that because you're just asking for the Lord to send trials. Now see, when you say make that statement, what you're saying is my stimulant for prayer is trials. That's not the stimulant. The stimulant is there's a God in heaven. So, if I pray, Lord, teach me to pray, am I not also saying, Lord, teach me more about Yourself, that You'd be more relevant to my life? Amen. That's our stimulant, is who He is. Not our circumstances, but who He is. You see, if somebody comes to you with a prayer request, you may not see, you may not feel the burden that they feel, so you don't really pray. The stimulant is how you feel there. But the stimulant ought to be, I know there's a God in heaven. This person's burdened. God has the answer. I'm going to pray. God help us. Brother Tim, if you come and lead us, verse of song.